Welcome to the Mandatory Social Interaction Show. I'm here with my co-host, Tim, or excuse me, my swift-footed co-host, Tim.
Ooh, swift-footed.
And my other
hyphenated ones.
My other effervescent co-host, Ben, and I'm Eric, and we're here to talk about creativity, streaming, random crap that comes to our mind, whatever we can think of today.
Your adjective, Eric, is indomitable.
Indomitable. I'm the indomitable Eric.
I didn't know I had to sticky.
Sticky. The sticky, Ben.
I saw a sticker. I panicked.
Sticky. Eric the sticky. Excellent. Beautiful. We're off to a great start.
Yes. Yep. I'm your sticky co-host, Eric. Thanks, <guy.
laughs> Well, it's good to be back. It's been a long time since we've done SIS, and it's a bit of a different format, but I think it's best that we are revisiting this because it was too good of a concept to kind of let go, I think. But we really, because Ben and I, if there's one thing that we really enjoy doing, it's talking about streaming and creating and content and just all that stuff. And Ben tells me that Eric is kind of a big deal, so I tend to listen when Ben says things. So it's great to have you on, Eric, and I appreciate you being willing to host this and
oh sure,
yeah, all that. Manage us basically, which is
that good freaking luck.
I love doing this. I've been wanting to do. Ben and I have like interesting conversations all the time because we work together. I'm always bugging Ben and coming around to his cube and being like, "What do you think about Star Wars nostalgia?" And he's like, "What the hell? I'm trying to work." and it's great. We have amazing, we always have like interesting conversations about all that stuff. Creating and making and. I do music as well. I do a few other things too. I've wanted to get into streaming, and I'm always there's so many kind of facets to being creative and being on stream and all these things that I've wanted to do something where I had these kind of conversations more often, this just seemed like a great opportunity to do that.
Yeah. So yeah, I completely agree. I love talking about this stuff, and I clearly both of you guys do too. So I think that it's good to have a little bit of I think we're thinking like half hour, 45 minutes, maybe an hour if we get into a topic. Like nothing super like we're not going to talk for like 3 hours or anything. As much as I like podcasts that go on for a while, it's
MSIS people. Used to be like 2 hours? Like didn't we just draw that out?
Yeah, it used to start as two-hour podcasts. Like, we'd split it up into one-hour chunks and then put one out on Saturday and Sunday or something.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And then we went down to 45 minutes, and then we went down to, like, a half hour for each episode. And the half hour seemed like the sweet spot there. But then we got tired of playing the games because traditionally we played the game while we were talking, like we were playing Minecraft or Terraria or something. And we got too wrapped up in the game. We didn't actually talk about the topic we were supposed to talk about.
We were trying to find games to play, right? And we played Borderlands, and that was a huge. Yeah.
And so eventually it just
Borderlands?
Turned into us talking like over a blank background, which was fine. And it was still entertaining. But then we just kind of got super busy and then fell to the wayside. So,
it's good to be back though.
History of MSIS.
Yeah, trying to play Borderlands and talk about anything but Borderlands would be impossible. I bet it was great. Yeah. Oh, and Borderlands is a great game.
What guest was that? Was that was that Burger? No.
No, we never had Burger as a guest.
I don't think Burger was ever on MSIS. We had somebody as a guest that episode and it was ridiculous. Like it was because like we ended up like the whole episode was just strategizing and talking about like loot and stuff. It was like it was a game. It was a let's play. It wasn't a podcast. Yeah.
I don't know if we had one for Borderlands.
Yeah, I don't know either. But I feel like we did.
I'm looking
because I thought we had like one or two other people with us because we had
Shaka Panda on for Minecraft once.
Oh,
that
Shaka
was really
Panda.
Good. The Minecraft ones. The Minecraft ones really lent themselves to a lot of people being involved and hanging out and just good discussions, because you could just mindlessly like break blocks and it was fun.
You know who I would love to talk to is it Ben? You're going to have to help me with this, cause I don't remember their Twitter handle. I think it's Punches Bears.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The game dev guy,
he's making this game, Tim. I don't know if you've seen, but he's making this game called, I think it's a, he, maybe it's not. He's making this game called Raccoons that looks hilarious. Essentially you play as these raccoons who are just tearing crap up, literally like going in people's backyards, dumping out their trash and then you're like dancing to hip hop. It's hilarious.
I feel like this game is based off of my real life experiences with raccoons.
Basically, yeah, it's hilarious. It looks so much. He keeps posting GIFs, GIFs. I don't know. I'm sure I offended someone. I knew I'd get someone with that.
Don't start the debate, Eric.
I've been calling them GIFs for years.
Well, I've been calling them GIFs. I'm not going to give you a GIF, okay? I'm not going to give you a GIF.
It's GIF, like giraffe. GIF. GIF.
That would be a giraffe.
Well, that's a discussion that will never have an end. So.
No, it will not. I'm sorry. I get so worked up about that one.
No, I know.
He's been posting.
Ben remembers.
Posting. Oh, yeah. He's been posting moving pictures of his game, and they look fantastic. That would be so much fun if we could get him on. I would love to talk to him about Raccoons. That looks like such a cool game.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds awesome. I would love to look at that game. I need to look it up.
Yeah,
I'll have Ben send me a link to their Twitter.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Absolutely worth checking out. One thing I wanted to talk to you about, Tim, because we were mentioning this kind of in the pre-show. You were talking about being a huge fan of nostalgia. And Ben and I had like an hour-long discussion about nostalgia yesterday.
We did.
And so something that I thought was interesting, and I wonder what your take is on some of this stuff, is there's a big nostalgia boom. Now, Ben and I make music, and there's a big nostalgia boom in music gear. For instance, Roland made a ton of classic drum machines and synthesizers, and essentially everything they've released in like the last 5 years is re-releases of those classic machines, like the Roland 808, which a lot of people might know from, you know, like, I mean, the Beastie Boys mentioned the 808 in some of their songs, and like, it's got a
Vanilla Ice does too, I think.
Yeah. Like it's,
yeah. Yeah, he does.
It's a classic sound. And if you listen to electronic music, you've heard it a million times. And so much so now in terms of nostalgia that like Puma is releasing an 808 themed shoe. Literally the shoes have like the 808 like colors,
color scheme and lining on them and stuff.
Totally.
The line art, cool. I mean, not
and
lining.
And now the funny thing is, and this is something I didn't mention yesterday, Ben, the funny thing is that's not the first 808 shoe that's been released. There was an 808 shoe like a year or two ago from I think Adidas.
Yeah, the link you sent me actually said that in there, where it's like their competitors did this, like the shoe competitors did the 808 shoe like last year, and then they went to, I don't fully understand like the political thing behind it,
right?
The shoe cartels.
But, yeah, I don't understand shoe culture, but it's a thing.
Yeah, like, I don't, and now I'm not a shoe guy either, but it was one of those weird things that there's been a lot of talk in the music kind of circles. Of like, geez, man, can we move on? Can we you know, bring out something new, something different? And it's not that that's not happening, but there's also this kind of big nostalgia boom, and it's not just the music industry. I'm kind of picking on it, but you know, you start looking at movies or video games or a lot of these things.
Yeah, and well, look at all the reboots in movies, right?
Like, yeah, exactly.
And all that, and in video games, all the HD re-releases and all that stuff.
You know, and so it kind of, one thing that I kind of mentioned to Ben yesterday is, I don't know if you know the comedian John Hodgman, but he considers he thinks that nostalgia is a toxic impulse. And now I don't necessarily agree with that, but I think it's an interesting perspective, and I can kind of see where he's coming from. Because if you start looking at movies and you start saying, like, wow, everything here is a reboot, everything here is a reissue, you know, all the big things are, you know, are these, you know, for lack of a better word, are unoriginal. And I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying they're not new. Right. And you look at something like Inception, which is like in my opinion, is kind of the exception to the rule, where you suddenly get these, you know, a brand new thing that no one's really seen before, and everyone goes like, oh, wow, this is really cool. Right. And, you know, and I'm really just kind of trying to open up the discussion into, you know, what do you think of some of this stuff? Because, like, on one hand, you look at video games and you look at a pixel art game and you go, this is really cool. This reminds me of my childhood. Mm-hmm. I look at Dead Cells and I think Dead Cells is the coolest looking Castlevania game I've ever seen. Because they can do so much more with this pixel art than they ever could when the NES or the SNES was out. But at the same time, I understand the other side where people say, you know, what's with the pixel art? I spent $600 on a video card and I've got pixel art, you know? I mean, I kind of want to see.
Yeah. And I can see where you're coming from. Like, I think nostalgia has a lot of value, but in moderation. And I think that's part of where the issue is that there's no moderation with it. The big draw for nostalgia is that it reminds you of what may be a simpler or a better time for you when you were younger or when you were in a good place. Like for me, I replayed through the game, The Saboteur, on stream a while back. And when I had played through that game on the first time I played it was I was in a really like rough spot, but it was like one of the biggest like highlights of that time. And so it kind of takes me to a point where, yeah, times were rough, but I still could have like hope in video games and like in that escapism. And it really like made me feel better to play that game. And to play that game again, like I had those same kind of feelings. Like it really like helped me like absorb into it and kind of escape from what I had dealt with in the past. So it's one of those deals that is a very it's dangerous in excess, and it can, and I think calling it toxic is interesting because much like with alcohol or smoking, if you do it too much, it's detrimental, right? But if you take just a little bit and you sprinkle in the new, like it can really give you a historical perspective on where you've been and what you've seen and what things were like. And I think that gives that holds a lot of value, because if you shun nostalgia, if you shun the old ways, the old stuff, then you're bound to just repeat it naturally. Like history repeats itself always. So it's really important in my view to look back at the past and respect that past, but to also be wary of letting it kind of control where you're going. Like there are some people who are like, well, that's trying to be a Metroidvania, but it can't be a Metroidvania because it's not Metroid or Castlevania. So it's stupid. And I get people like that all the time. And it's like, things can be different and new and still pay homage to the past in moderation and still be acceptable and not a ripoff, as a lot of people say. Like the same thing happens with a lot of even modern games that are really big. Like if you look at like Overwatch, there are a lot of Overwatch-esque games, kind of like Paladins. Like if you ever heard of Paladins, it's kind of like Overwatch, but the characters have like similar abilities and similarities, but the gameplay is very different and all that stuff. But it definitely has that kind of feel where the characters have personality and are all unique and have their own abilities. And it's a hero type shooter. So there's a lot of commonalities that kind of overlap, and a lot of people gave flack to Paladins because they were like, it's Overwatch, but it's not Overwatch, it's an Overwatch clone. And it's not really in that regard, because they're paying homage to something better or bigger. Might not necessarily be nostalgic in this case, but this is my comparison that I have in mind. And so to completely say that it's bad because it pays homage or shares some commonalities is a problem as well. I think it's really important to find that middle ground when it comes to dealing with nostalgia.
Yeah, and music has that too. Like with, I mean, going back to pixel art, chiptune is something that's very, it can separate communities depending on how pure the chiptune is. And it's just like, it's music with simple, you know, instruments. It doesn't have to follow all of the strict rules that were established back in the Nintendo days, because, you know, first of all, making music in that structure is not always fun. And no. You know, making music should be fun. It's good to challenge yourself, and I like using like the structure that Nintendo has, but that's not for everybody. And you know, it's an expression extrapolated from that style, and that's totally fine. I still think that that's like considered chiptune music,
right?
It's still like you said, it's still calling back to the nostalgia-esque type of style, but it's also expanding on that and iterating on that idea, instead of just sitting back and being like, oh, remember when music sounded exactly like this? Here's another 40 minutes of that.
I feel like nostalgia only has value if it is coupled with innovation to an extent. Nostalgia is important. Like you can enjoy like an old game or something. Like, you know, it doesn't have to be an innovation on that game, but and you can go back and enjoy an old song or whatever. But like when creating something new that has that nostalgia throwback, I think nostalgia plus innovation is just the ultimate way to separate yourself, but to also kind of give respect and appreciation to the old ways.
Yeah, that's, and like, here's something that I was, that came to mind while you guys were talking. Ben, I'm not sure you've seen it yet, The Last Jedi. Did you see it, Tim?
I did, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've probably seen it 100 times.
Okay. So, and one thing that's funny to me with the reaction to The Last Jedi is I felt, and this is my personal feeling, so, you know, if you did liked it or didn't like it, that's on you. I really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed it because it was different than any other Star Wars movie. For me, I thought, wow, this is really cool. This is showing me something new. This is completely different than other things. I had a couple of quibbles with it that I was like, I could have done without this or that. But for the most part, I really liked it for that reason, because I was like, wow, this went a different direction. It like it surprised me. I had, you know, there were things in it that I was like, oh, I wouldn't have ever expected that. And it, you know, came out of left field and I thought it was cool. There was an awful lot of reactions to it that.
No, we're fine.
Oh, you're good.
They're looking at the birds.
Oh, okay.
there's an awful lot of reactions on the internet where people looked at that movie and, like, because it wasn't like the old Star Wars movies, the people seemed to really not like it.
Yeah, and you get a similar reaction to the alternate universe Star Trek stuff. If you remember that, how many people like had a lot of backlash against that?
Oh, because like the Abrams
Star Trek,
the Abrams universe
Star Trek. Yeah,
oh, yeah,
yeah. The AOS, which is the alternate original series, they kind of took the original and made their own spin on it, and it's the same characters but in an alternate universe is the whole idea.
Yeah,
and interestingly, people had a really like diehard Star Trek fans had such a visceral reaction to it, and the same thing happened with Star Wars. I personally, like, I'm one of those guys. I just love Star Wars as it is, but to see the diehards go, this isn't what I grew up with. This isn't the original, so it's not good, is kind of strange to me to experience, especially considering like I've always been the kind to like stuff that's off the beaten path. Like I Star Wars Episode One is one of my favorite films of all time.
Hey, that's cool.
I'm one of those guys. Yeah, and it's you know, it's just one of those deals that people are so almost like they get almost like aggressive about it when it comes to anything that might either pay pay homage to something else. Even if it's in the same universe, like Star Trek or Star Wars episode first, which is it was just interesting to see that so many people were like, "Oh, it's just a repeat of the whole movie. It's all the same. It hasn't changed any." And that sort of thing. It's just really fascinating to me to see the reactions that people had when it's like, but it's new Star Wars and it's in the same universe. And it's like, just enjoy it. Like, either enjoy it as it is or like let other people enjoy it. But people were like attacking people for liking it. And that's
yeah,
that's where it gets toxic and it becomes like a real problem. And I think, you know, when John Hodgman talks about that, I think that's that's important to realize that it's not a bad thing until people begin to use it as a tool to hurt others. And I think that's where the biggest problem comes in. Or if they
get like so invested in it where it becomes like part of their being where they have to defend it. And
yes,
it's like, you know, it's designed as entertainment primarily. You're not supposed to like build a religion around it.
Right, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what always kind of blows my mind is when people kind of make that kind of line in the sand where they're like, well, this is my Star Trek or my Star Wars, and this is your Star Trek or Star Wars. And it's like, why can't it just be everybody? It's like, can't you just let people like what they like?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly.
And that's one of the interesting things, too, is nostalgia kind of makes people some things that's some Star Wars and Star Trek are good examples, but anything that's been around for a long time, people start to think that they own it.
Yes.
People feel like, you know, and that's one of the things that comes out of like the new Star Trek movies is people say, well, that's not, or Star Wars and Star Trek. Yeah, that's not Star Wars. That's not Star Trek. And it's like, no, you don't get to make that decision.
Right.
You can 100% say I don't like that.
Yes.
That's
absolutely
that's valid. Hey, I did not like this movie for this reason, and that's great. But you can't say you're not the arbiter of what is and is not Star Wars or Star Trek or pick your thing.
When people went nuts, and I'm going to just ride this Star Wars comparison, but when people went nuts,
that's
on
a
the,
surprise.
Hey, come on.
I think Ben's so outnumbered here.
When people went nuts on the re-releases, the special editions of the original trilogy, that was George Lucas's vision. That was something he wanted to do. And when people were like, oh, you can't change Star Wars, you're not allowed to do that, it's like, he can do what he wants. It's his thing. Like, yeah. Like that's like going to, you know, going to Ben and saying, Ben, your music, you have to rewrite it the way I like it or else it's not valid.
Yeah, I've had clients like that before.
Yeah, and that's just it, is like, it makes zero sense in the context of how art works and how even I, you know, the ownership of ideas works. It's like, you didn't create this. Like, if you want it to be yours, like, if you really want it to be yours that you can say, I'm making all the decisions about this, then make your own universe.
Yeah.
I hate the argument of, you know, if you think you can do better, go write your own. But
oh no, that's awful.
Yeah. But in this case, like, if you want to have complete control over something and feel like you own it, then you have to actually own it. It has to be yours. You can't say you can't do this. That's not your call to make.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't like what an artist does, feel free to criticize. Like people shouldn't be immune to criticism, but also don't take their agency away just because you have an emotional investment in it.
Yeah. And as streamers and creators in general, like, I know YouTube comments for me, sometimes I get somebody was just like, well, you should have done this, this, and this for this tutorial or whatever. And it's like, that's good advice. Thank you. But you know, that doesn't mean I'm going to do it. And I know Tim, right, like on your stream, you have a very explicit thing about backseat gaming. It's like,
all the time,
don't backseat game because this is my stream, not yours.
Right.
So it's definitely something where people they become invested in a form of entertainment and then they feel like they have some sort of ownership over that form as well.
Correct.
And you know, it's great that people get invested that far, but there's definitely a line that needs to be drawn as to what is, you know, what is okay to do and what is being disruptive to the art that's being generated.
Absolutely.
I guess.
Yeah.
Well, and one of the things is, or one of the reasons people get that people do that is, like, Star Wars is a good example, is people identify with it. Well, no, right. But I mean, there are other good examples, Ben. Star Wars just comes to
we
mind.
We just can't get away from Star Wars, can we, guys?
Maybe you should start liking it, Ben. Like what I like.
We'll convert you yet.
I just don't watch it because I don't have time.
You know, but I mean, that's one of those things that, or I mean, you know, another good example would be Marvel. You know, because Marvel movies, the movies have for the most part appeased the fans, but you know, there are occasionally things where, you know, stuff comes out and it's like, no, that's not how Captain America is. You know, that's not what Spider-Man does. Spider-Man doesn't have organic web shooters. He's got, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And part of the thing is because people have had access to it for so long and they identify with it and it's become part of their own identity, like their personal identity. And then they start to, when something changes, that makes them question that. And no one ever wants to question their like personal beliefs.
Well, it almost feels like an attack to them when somebody, when like say Disney bought Star Wars, like I was in the 501st Legion for like 6 years. And if for those who don't know what it is, that's a Star Wars costuming club. And I used to dress up as a stormtrooper for like 6 years, like a screen accurate stormtrooper set of armor. And so I was in it around the time that all this news that Disney went, you know, when Disney bought Star Wars and all this stuff. So to see these diehard fans, and I mean, I consider myself a diehard fan, but not to the point of it starting to like affect my well-being when something happens. But these people like melted down.
Oh no, Tim!
You know, that's it. Star Wars is done. Okay, cool. Star Wars is over. It's everything's ruined forever. You know, and is everything okay?
No. We're cool. Like the video froze like right at the moment when you got the most intense.
of course. I'm used to it. But yeah, so it's just very interesting because like so people like actually wrap themselves up. Like who they are and not just like a like for me like I would say that Star Wars is part of my identity because I grew up on it and it's been part of my life since forever, but I wouldn't like while I criticize Disney a lot for what they do and maybe some of the choices they make and the directorial choices they make and things like that, I always will love Star Wars regardless of what they do with the franchise. They could cancel it tomorrow and I'd be like, I've still got my memories and I've still got what I love. And that's where you got to separate the nostalgia from yourself.
Well, yeah. And like you were talking about like canceling it. And it's just like, I feel, and this is something that I don't think a lot of people feel, but I think Firefly is good at 13 episodes.
Yeah.
Like I think that it had a fantastic run and I'm sad that it was done. But I would hate for that series to go on for 12 seasons and just languish.
Yep.
Like, I absolutely love that series the way it is. And I know there's always people, like, signing petitions, like, bring back Firefly, brown coats, and all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, it would be great if it came back, but I can enjoy it the way that it is.
Yep.
And I'm totally fine with it that way. And it's like that it doesn't mean it. I would prefer if something didn't exist until it became boring, I guess is kind of what I was saying there.
And I think that's, it's interesting because that's such a, that is a thing. Like people would rather companies make a product until it has literally nothing of value left.
Yeah.
Just so that they can get like their fix. Like it's almost like an addiction on its own. Right. Like, I was talking about being addicted to MMOs before, but it's like some people are just addicted to whatever it is that they get into. Like Firefly is a great example of that, or Star Trek is a big one. Like Trekkies are, like, again, I'm a Trekkie. I love Star Trek, but I am not like, I'm not one of those who's just like, well, I actually hate EOS because of what it does to the universe and ruins everything. Like, I'm not that kind of guy. I enjoy what's there, and the beauty of it is I can choose what I ignore and what I don't ignore in that universe, right? Mm-hmm. So Like, if I don't like episode 8, I can say, well, you know, whatever. I'm just not going to watch it anymore.
Yeah.
I don't have to get upset about it. Well, it's just, it is what it is.
Yeah, the funny thing is, like, people act like, I love the, you know, George Lucas ruined my childhood. I love that argument because it's like, really? Did he come into your house and take the DVDs of the original movies away from you? Or, you know, I mean, like, right? What like, I mean, at some point it's like, dude, okay, if you want to say that only episodes 4, 5, and 6 exist in your headcanon, then do that. Like, it does. Yeah. That doesn't have to leave your head. You know, it can just be like, I like 4, 5, and 6, and everything else is whatever you want to call it—a remake, a ripoff, or whatever, whatever it is. I'm not that guy. But
people like 4, 5, and 6, so I have to go on my personal crusade to let them know that they're wrong.
Yeah, like personally, episode 1 was not my favorite Star Wars movie. I do actually feel like I need to revisit it at some point. Because I haven't watched it for long enough, I kind of want to watch it again and just see, like, I don't really like it, but I, you know, has my opinion changed? Did I like, you know,
have you grown as a person since then?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I think,
become more Tim-like is really the question.
I think that's part of the problem though, is that like these people that get like caught up on like a specific thing and then make that part of them, they don't grow much. Like, if you get so stuck on something and you're like, no, this is the way it ought to be, this is the only way that matters, it's like you're not improving yourself. Like focus on you. Like, open yourself up to new experiences and maybe you'll be a more interesting person. Yeah. Instead of an insufferable douche, maybe. like I think that's a valid thing to look at when you are exploring the ideas of being a fun person to have at parties.
Yeah, I'm really glad that we went with the mandatory social interaction show and not the insufferable douches. I mean, that was the other option, but I think we made the right choice.
That maybe that could be you and Ben's band name.
That'll get us a lot of gigs.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, man, with some of the band names that I've seen that I'm not going to mention here, they apparently got gigs. So anyway, yeah. That's one of those weird things about nostalgia, that it's good and it's bad. Like, it's hard. Yeah, you know, I mean, and like Ben and I were saying yesterday, there isn't an answer to this. There's no, like, is it good? There's no, like, no, nostalgia's 100% bad, or it's 72% good, or whatever, you know, like, there's no right answer. But it's interesting. I almost feel like as a creator, there's kind of a balance that you have to have for referencing nostalgia, for you know, pulling in like nostalgia into your work. And I'm going to use an example, and I'm not sure how familiar either of you are with Boards of Canada. Boards of Canada, when I listened to Boards of Canada, I was born in the mid-70s, and all I can think of is my childhood, even though none of the sounds, nothing that Boards of Canada does is like specifically from my childhood, but it's like it references it in a way that it hits me in, like, it doesn't even hit me in the intelligent, like, oh, this is that, you know, thing from my childhood. It hits me like in a further, deeper level where it's just like all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, this is a feeling I remember having.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, that to me is an example of using nostalgia in a really interesting and like artistically fulfilling way, where it's not used necessarily directly, but it has that element where people are nostalgic for it, even though it's not the thing, or it's, you know what I mean? Maybe I don't know if I'm making a point properly or not, but you know, well, discuss my idiocy.
I was going to respond to Blue and just say, yeah, you can ask your questions. This is our first episode for this podcast, so I don't know how thoroughly we'd be able to answer your questions, but you're free to ask them. But as you were saying, Eric, this is like an original IP that came out recently, Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Was very, very good at tickling the nostalgia, whatever. Body part still had original things to say regarding that, where it was based in the 80s and it was very heavily influenced, you know, by 80s culture, but everything inside of it was still original. Mm-hmm. And or at least original enough. It was right. Just you know, it was based upon a lot of different things back from there, but it's like it became popular because of the nostalgia value, but it was still original. You know, content. And I think that there is a line that you can draw, like Boards of Canada, where you can reference and resonate with the nostalgia crowd without just being like, see, and you know, like just being like, this is the thing that from your childhood and you should enjoy this now. And so there's definitely
that's one of the big problems with Ready Player One, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that, I was going to mention Ready Player One, where it's just like, remember this? This is exactly what you used to like.
In the book, they just list stuff. Like, that's the thing. Like, that's as far as I read. And I was like, I can't, this is not a book. This is a nostalgia trap. Like, it was like, oh, I have an action figure of G.I. Joe and a DeLorean, and I have D&D and this. And it's like, This is not a story. This is you just trying to, you know, get people to buy into your nostalgia trap. Like nostalgia, as I've said, like nostalgia has value up until it becomes just like a list of things that makes you go, oh yeah, I remember that thing. And it's like, then go watch the thing. Don't just like read about it in a book that's not contributing anything to the conversation. Yeah. So. Yeah, and I heard the movie was like the movie posters like totally turned me off of the movie. I didn't go see it because of that. Like, if you saw any of those movie posters, they did like a whole bunch of like homage movie posters, but yeah, they did them like in such like a ham-fisted and half-assed way. They were like offensive to those who actually enjoyed those things. Like, I was just like, ew, like no thanks. I'm done. I'm not gonna go see this. I'm not getting my money. So
yeah, I hate to say that I enjoyed the book, but I enjoyed it because it was so stupid. It's okay. Ready Player One is Twilight for nerds. That's what it is.
Nice.
It's stupid fantasy fulfillment stuff. Mm. And I did not, you know, I did not get intellectual enjoyment out of it, but it was fun to read. Mm. I haven't seen the movie, but I feel the movie is very similar, where it's just like, This is stupid. This is schlocky. This is just like, this is entertainment, but it's not going to like enrich your life in any particular way. And I feel that's probably the extreme nostalgia stuff that probably is considered toxic, like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
But it can still be entertaining, but I can kind of see your point where it gets to the point where it's pandering and it's not like contributing anything to society as a whole.
That's a great word, pandering. Exactly what it is. It's just pandering to the audience. It's to make people who grew up in that era and watch those things go, yeah, I immediately like this because they mentioned Ghostbusters or whatever. Yeah. It's like, that's not a reason to like. You can like Ghostbusters, but you shouldn't like this thing because they mentioned Ghostbusters. Like, that's not a valid reason to like enjoy a thing or like to base your book off of just like, oh, I'm gonna put on my proton pack and get my TARDIS and fly to, you know. It's just like really, like, this is not, it's not, you know, it's not, it's just not well done. It's no. like I said, you can have nostalgia as long as you're innovating. And like, from everything that I've read about this book, like I said, I stopped reading the book because it got to like listing nostalgia things and I was like, this is garbage, and I just stopped reading it. But not to knock, you know, your experience with it.
No, no, me, I knew it was just
like,
bad.
I was just like, oh, this is terrible. But
I enjoyed it because it was bad. That's kind of what it is. I'm also the guy that sits on Netflix and watches awful sci-fi movies in the background while I'm working, just because they're so awful. So it's totally fine.
Well, I think it's really important to, you know, not have like, because from what I understand from the book and the movie, it's like it's all it is like a like you said, a fantasy fulfillment, like rescue the princess type thing.
Yeah,
and
pretty much.
It doesn't contribute anything new or anything, but.
You know, one of the things that, no, I did not read the book, nor have I seen the movie. So we're great critics at this point, criticizing things we know nothing about. But the one thing that I will say about the movie specifically is I'm watching the trailer for it and I go, okay, so this kid is, I don't know, 15 and he's supposed to exist in this, you know, future world that's, I don't know, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, whatever it's supposed to be.
I think it's in like the 2040s.
Yeah. Okay. So another 20, 25 years from now. And I know kids today that are roughly that age. I also know that they are not into anything that I was into when I was a kid. And I'm looking at that and going, why would a 15-year-old from 25 years from now be into Back to the Future?
Right?
It's like related to this. I don't know how far you got into the book, Tim.
I didn't read it at all.
Yeah.
Tim.
So
I didn't get very far.
The synopsis of the synopsis of the book is there's the Oasis, which is like basically Second Life for VR, where basically everybody goes in there and that's where they live their lives because the real world is crap. The person that generated the Oasis was an older guy who really loved nostalgia stuff. So he hid a bunch of Easter eggs within the game. And when he passed, his will said, if you can find these Easter eggs, you basically own the Oasis. So when he passed, everybody started studying all of these old like 80s and 90s things because everybody knew that the person that created the software was a big nut for those. So basically they know all of this stuff because they that's kind of the
getting
the
video issues
to
here.
Get people to talk about the 80s stuff. So yeah, otherwise, yes, it is ridiculous for anybody to care in 2014 or 2040 about, you know, whatever happened 60 years ago or 80 years ago, like, you know, 40 years before they were born.
Right.
So
yeah, because I have trouble getting kids that visit my streams interested in a game from 3 years ago, much less a game from anything from 40 years ago. Yeah,
so, exactly.
Yeah, it's like I the reason that I like Ghostbusters and Back to the Future is because I watched them all when I was a kid because that's what I was into. And it's like you have to have an interest in those things in the first place for it to have any impact. And like, I honestly couldn't tell you anything from 40 something years ago that I am even into that I could even really reference. Unless it's just because I have an interest in history. So, mm-hmm.
Exactly. So I mean,
it's one of those deals.
Could you imagine trying to stream like Atari 2600 games?
That'd actually be kind of rad, but that's just me.
No, I. but we're okay.
You're the target audience.
Yeah, we are the target audience for that. But I would love that, but
a kid nowadays would probably not come in unless they had a vested interest in video game history.
Yeah,
like otherwise, kids would just be like, "No, that's stupid. Screw that." You know. So yeah,
play Asteroids for, you know, 3 hours.
Yeah,
this is the best.
Or Pitfall, you know, Pitfall, where it's like, you know, is that supposed to be a person?
Right.
Like,
right,
you know,
exactly.
Are those
and kids wouldn't stick around for that.
Totally.
Do you want to talk about Blue's question real quick? I mean, I don't really know. Like I said, this is kind of the first time we've done this, but we are talking through Discord as well, so we can confirm that is actually a thing that works. So that's good. Twitch interaction, we're not entirely sure yet. I think, Eric, you turned off like alerts and stuff for this because we wanted to focus primarily on the discussion and have Twitch chat as something that is a supplement to that, where people can inject their ideas and their thoughts and we can riff on that. So it's not necessarily about like gaining followers and getting the direct interaction like on screen. But I believe the focus that we have is we want to have a community interaction, but it's more something that happens organically in the discussion rather than something that is like blasted in everybody's faces with, you know, crazy emojis and dub tech or dubstep music.
Dub tech. I like that.
Dub tech is a good genre.
I would say the same thing, you know, basically in terms of Twitch interaction and stuff. This is the first one we've ever done. One of the goals with this is it's going to be put up on YouTube as a separate, basically if you're on YouTube, you'll be able to just find this and watch the show, similar to something like Night Attack or Current Geek or one of those. So it's kind of more of a podcast than a stream. We're streaming the creation of it because, you know, there is a nice interactive element with the chat. And the other thing is, I wanted to reemphasize that, you know, like Ben was saying, this is our first one. So, you know, this is kind of where we're starting. That doesn't mean it's where we're finishing. We can 100% keep innovating and changing things. And, you know, maybe at some point in the future, it will make sense to, put up some stream interactions or, you know, or some kind of alerts or whatever. It would have to be
Hit the pizza button.
Yeah, you know, we would have to limit it a little bit, you know, because we wouldn't want it to be that. And it also has to play well on YouTube. And then it also, the audio from this is going to be an audio podcast that you'll be able to get on your phone via iTunes or whatever you use for podcasts. So that's one of the things that this is kind of needs to work in multiple places. So we're not heavy on the stream interaction stuff yet.
Right. Which it's something that we can probably grow into, but like Blue said, the interactive stuff can, really connect and carry forward the conversation, and highlight what's going on in the chat rather than it being a conversation with chat directly. Because the primary focus is the interaction between us three, whereas the chat can help, bring up ideas that may have not been mentioned or things like that as well.
Yeah, like I said, it's a supplement to the stream. It's not a driver of the stream. Right. I guess that's the condensed version. And thank you for the compliment saying that we're doing great. A lot of us have already, both Tim and I are big streamers, and Eric is a streamer, and he does a lot of stuff like this as well. So we're all thankfully comfortable in front of a microphone and camera, which is which is a good step in the right direction. And Blue, if you haven't done that before, it will take a little bit to get used to. But I actually, and I know Tim, you're coming up against a hard deadline for having to leave. But
I still got like 10 minutes, 10-15.
Yeah, I found streaming to be one of the best things that I've ever done to help combat introversion. And it was very surprising. And my wife was actually very surprised when it happened as well, where I would actually talk to people after I started streaming for a couple months. I was a little bit more comfortable talking just in general, and being able to talk into a microphone confidently is incredibly valuable just as a life skill, I feel. And I think that it's good to start a podcast because you'll definitely get some value out of it.
Well, and podcasts are a little bit cathartic too. It lets you really think about different topics, maybe in ways you haven't, and hear the perspectives of the people that you are working with. And I think respect goes a long way in that. And if there's one thing I could recommend for a new podcast is just remember to respect your fellow creators, that they have a valid opinion too. And one thing that I've seen some podcasts do that don't last very long is that they start to tear each other apart or tear each other down. And rather than that, like one thing that really helped me is taking a lot of speech and debate classes when I was in high school, and like having respectful discussions and conversations helped a ton with that. Listening to what someone says, and I kind of and coming from, but I disagree. And then coming up with your own response. And that's
jackass.
Yeah, exactly. You suck. Though. So it's, yeah, it's really important to make sure that you're respectful of your fellow creators who co-hosts, are on. Yeah, your co-hosts. Thank you. I'm having trouble with words. What else is new?
One other thing I would say is be yourself.
Don't be a character. Yeah.
Don't be a character. Don't make, you know, don't try to front. Don't, because being a character and trying to front, you can do for a little while. Mm-hmm. But in the long run, it's not sustainable. And the further you get from who you really are, the harder it is to keep it up.
Yeah.
And the other thing I would mention is do something. It's really easy. All these tools exist, and you've got infinite abilities now on your desktop PC or your laptop or whatever you're using. It's super easy to lock yourself in to something that you can't actually sustain. You know, if you start a podcast and you record for 3 hours and you're going to edit it down to 45 minutes, you're never going to, you'll do three shows and then you will be like, screw this. I'm never, yeah. You know, or it'll just take over your life. You know, if you do a Movies with Mikey, and sit down and write out 20 minutes of spoken stuff and then sit and edit, you know, that has to take him.
That
I know
your
he
job.
Yeah. I know he does. He puts out like a thing every 2 weeks, roughly. And I know it takes him forever to do it because I mean, it is his job. I mean, it takes these things, even though you see something that takes 8 minutes of your time, like that Binging with Babish you watched last night probably took him 4 hours to do or more, depending on how long the actual cooking took. But just to edit it and do the voiceover and you know, and then do the cooking and stuff, that's four to 6 hours to do that 8 minute video. Yeah. We're trying to do 45 minutes to an hour here or whatever it comes out to. You know, we made a decision early, you know, and I'm kind of driving this decision. But we made a decision earlier where I said, this is what I want to do. I'm going to not edit the show. I am going to trim out the beginning and the end, so that it starts, you know, it has a logical start and stop. And then everything that happens in the middle happens in the middle. If you sneeze,
unless
it's
something horrible happens.
Yeah,
but yeah,
exactly.
Do it live.
You know,
exactly.
And we're essentially going to do it live, which is one of the reasons we're streaming it as well. Because I know the more editing I add to this show, the less I'm going to be willing to do it. If I can, if I can just trim the beginning and the end, and then all I have to do is like upload it and, you know, and stuff like that, that is so much more sustainable. And it took me years to come to that conclusion. I've tried doing edited shows. I've tried doing, you know, I've done a bunch of different things. And the thing that works for me may not work for you, but the thing that works for me and sustainable for me is something like this, where I can do minimal editing and just, you know, when I'm done making the thing is done.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, and I mean, that could be a whole other topic that maybe we can talk about next time. And that rolls in very well. And this is a topic that I've wanted to, a video that I've wanted to create about how to make a Patreon. And I think that is a very, making it sustainable and making it something that doesn't consume your life is basically priority one when you're doing something like that. Because if you already have a day job, if you suddenly have two day jobs, something's going to break. Something's going to give.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
I know
that. Aside. Yeah.
So well,
so yeah, it's like you have to find something that is sustainable and something that allows you to basically do it and then finish it and get it out there before you get sick of it, and allows you to have an actual life as well, because we do this stuff for fun and obviously we don't get paid for it. So it's like, we have to also pay bills. So it's fun to do and it's awesome to talk about this stuff and it's really good to interact with people, but it's also something where we have to, you know, meter the time in such a way where we can also, you know, do stuff that makes money so we can continue to do this, the fun things.
What's money?
So. Yeah, right?
Well, and I think that might be as good a place as any to wrap it up.
Yeah.
So I'll...
So, yeah, on the 28th, we won't be doing this. But we're moving forward, we're thinking about every Saturday at about 1 p.m. is when we'll start. And Tim and Eric, you guys might start doing the pre-show. And then I traditionally stream on Saturdays, but I was thinking about basically raiding you guys every time when I'm done. And then I'll just hop on over, and then we can talk for an hour or so, and then we should be good.
Yeah.
But yeah, on the 28th, next Saturday, we are not going to be here because Tim and I are going to be doing a charity stream, a 24-hour charity stream, which is going to be super fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and where do people go for that, Ben?
That would be on Tim's channel, the mixer.com/insertcointheater.
Yep.
Cool.
Which you can see under Tim's name down there. So if you're interested in checking that out, hop on over there and follow Tim. He is a super good streamer, just in general. And
those are really harsh words, Ben Burns.
He is a terrific streamer.
I'll be honest with you. It's a little weird being on Twitch again after being on Mixer for so long.
Wearing your Mixer hat.
Look, I got to represent the brand that I've chosen, all right? The platform that I jumped to, okay?
Let me get my hat.
Uh-oh. Does Ben have a Twitch hat?
Does he?
I don't know. This is breaking news.
Yeah.
This is...
Luchador, bitches.
That's Ben's new streaming platform, luchador.com. We'll all be switching to that next week.
More like luchadork.
I actually got this when I made a soundtrack for somebody, and this was like some of the branding stuff he did. So it's like, it's actually kind of rad. I like it
a lot. That is pretty cool.
That is awesome. It's a great hat. So. Yeah. Cool. Well, let's wrap it up. That's going to do it for the Mandatory Social Interaction show this week. As always, I'm your sticky host, Eric. And Tim and Ben, I think we're going to sign off. And everyone have a good week.
Yeah. Take care, guys.
Take care.